All right. I was talking with Ron about this, the difficulty of trying to do an overview. I have a tendency to be long-winded anyway. We all know that. I'm watching the clock. We're leaving here by 8 o'clock, whether we're done or not. I don't know if I have 15 minutes worth of material or if I have an hour and 15 minutes worth of material. That depends on you. First, second, and third John takes at most, I'm a slow reader, at most 15 minutes for us to read it. And then we read it again and we go, oh. And then we read it again and we go, oh. Well, unfortunately, when you have a brain like mine, you go, oh, oh, oh. And so I have, normally Vicky types my notes for me, but unfortunately my notes were changing and changing and changing and changing. Because there's so many things that we can talk about in 1 John. We are going to try and do a true overview. Never done this before. Hopefully we will do it justice. Yes.
One question.
I'm in trouble. He's asking questions and we haven't even started yet.
Well, we're going to start out
here. Okay, go ahead.
Slow things out. The writing style looks like the Apostle John. Is this written by the Apostle John?
So that is my belief, and we're actually going to deal with that first thing out of the gate. You know, when you study and you go to commentaries and you read different books and you print out different things, you're going to get a lot of different answers. I think when we look at this again, example here in just a second, that we can, without being worldly scholars, come to a conclusion that the book of John and the book of 1 John, 2 John, and 3 John were written by the same individual. And so we will, we're going to take a look at some passages here in a second. Go ahead.
Yeah. John, I think you're right. I think John is the primary writer, but he uses the plural we.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if he's including other writers or contributors or what, but he does use the plural we.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I noticed that, and I thought about it for a little bit, and then I set it aside, and if you'll think back to when Larry was here, Larry used that word we a lot. Now I know that Larry was not over in Egypt. He was not over in parts of the country, digging up fossils and uncovering, but he used the word we when he talked about those discoveries, what we had found. Why would we use the word we? Why, as a speaker, would I use the word we?
Include a larger group.
Yeah, include it. So John, as he writes this, in my opinion, this is just opinion, when he writes this, he's imparting this information to these individuals, but he's not, and Dean has been talking about this in baptism. You know, I wasn't baptized, you know, it's not John's baptism, it's not Peter's baptism, it's the Lord's baptism, right? John is taking the focus, I believe, off of himself and putting it onto the message and recognizing the fact that there were other apostles, other individuals that were responsible for the gaining of this knowledge. And I think that you can include Jesus Christ in that we. So, let's just do this. And so we're going to do a lot of reading tonight. They're all going to be short passages. I'm not going to call on people because that causes pauses. So we're just going to go around the room. And if you're at home and you want to read, once I get around the room, then speak up. But we're going to start right over here with Di. And Di, if you would, now we should just have our Bibles open to the book of 1 John. Open up to John, and I would like you to read 1 John 1, 1 through 4.
What was from the beginning, what we have heard, what we have seen with our eyes, what we beheld and our hands handled concerning the word of life. The life was manifested, and we have seen and bear witness and proclaim to you the eternal life, which was with the Father and was manifested to us. What we have seen and heard, we proclaim to you, also that you also may have fellowship with us, and indeed our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. And these things we write so that our joy may be made complete.
Thank you. And then over here to Sharon, 2 John verses 1 through 3. Excuse me. Yeah. Book of 2 John.
2.
Yep. Sorry, I got to slow my brain down, slow my mouth down.
2 John.
2 John verses 1 through 3.
1 through 3. The elder to the chosen lady and her children, whom I love in truth, and not only I, but also all who know the truth, for the sake of truth which abides in us and will be with us forever. Grace, mercy, and peace will be with us from God the Father and from Jesus Christ, the Son of the Father, in truth and love.
Thank you. And then, Ron, if you would read out of 3 John verses 1 through 4.
The elder to the beloved Gaius, whom I love in truth. Beloved, I pray that in all respects you may prosper and be in good health just as your soul prospers. For I was very glad when brethren came and testified to your truth, that is, how you are walking in truth. I have no greater joy than this, the fear of my children walking in the truth.
Thank you. Okay. So it's a lot easier when Lenny and Dean put everything up here. That's not easier for me. So it's not up there. So you'll have to bear with me. Those three different sets of verses. Can somebody tell me what the difference in those is? This is going to lead into Bill's question here in just a second. What's the difference? What do we notice about 1 John 1 through 4? As opposed to 2 John and 3 John. Bill?
Well, in 2 and 3 John, he refers to himself as an elder.
Let me ask you this. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry. Sorry, Bill.
1 John, it seems like it's to a greater number of people. It's kind of written to... I don't know, sort of, it doesn't identify who the recipients are. In the second letter, it does identify our recipient. It's the chosen lady and her children, and which I think is a church. And then the other one is to his dear friend Gaius. So those are written to individuals.
Okay, and you're close. And you're close, yes.
The similarity of 1 John to the book of John.
There we go. Go ahead, Bill.
In 1 John, he's using the term we. And in 2 and 3 John, it's I instead.
Okay. What I'm trying to get at, and we're gonna flip over. So while I'm doing this, I want you to turn over to John chapter 1, verses 1 through 3. John chapter 1, verses 1 through 3. But what do most books, New Testament books in the Bible start with?
Salutation.
Yeah, they start with an introduction, don't they? They're to somebody. And then they end with a conclusion. Yet when we look at the book of 1 John, he just starts talking, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Okay. Now let's come over here to the book of John. We're going to look at verses 1 through 3. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and he was in the beginning with God, and all things were made through him, and without him, nothing was made that was made. Where's the introduction?
That was exactly, I was just about to bring that up. That starts exactly the way the Gospel of John does.
Yes, yes. So that, I mean, and that is just a simple example. We could spend all night proving why John is the author of 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. I just had this discussion with the lady at my dentist's office who was informing me that I was a week early. So then we stood around and talked. She's actually a member of the Church of Christ, considers herself very conservative, hasn't been attending because of Zoom. So she's been doing the Zoom thing like a lot of our individuals, and she wants to get back into it. And hopefully we can get her here. Super sweet. But we were talking about the fact that the way that my brain works, I'm more worried about the message. I'm more worried about what it is that's being written in 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. And so I don't spend a lot of time on the who, the what, and the why. It doesn't matter to me. It's in the Bible. I trust that the words in this Bible are God's words. And so this is a lazy approach. I'm going to be the first to tell you that. But I want to know the what and the why. And the who is not as important to me. So I've not spent a lot of time in my Bible studies memorizing who wrote what, when it was written, where it was written. So a lot of people will like to use maps, and I think maps are great, and it's good to understand that. But that's not my focus. And that's why I'm not the full-time preacher. Because I function at a different, not a better, but a different level. I look at things differently. But when I look at John, the Gospel of John, and the way that's written, and then I come over to 1 John and I look at that, they are identical. And there's not a lot of places in the New Testament where we can start a book without a greeting, and where we start a book in the exact same way. So it's just a little snippet. And it's about all the time that I'll spend. There were several scholars, different things that I read, and they talk about the fact that 1 John lacks the formal greetings usually found at the opening and conclusion of a typical Greek letter. And so then they call these things, and I won't pronounce any of this right, but they call them short treaties or homilies. And a treaty is just a written work dealing formally and systematically with the subject. So he's just getting to the point, which for me, I love. I like to just get to the point. Bill.
2nd and 3rd John are very different from that because they're love letters to a beloved brother. They start out speaking about how much he cares about someone, how they're beloved. And then there's this short message about things that are going on, but basically it's a love letter. So I really care about you.
Yeah, and one of the commentaries that I read basically said that they felt like these three letters were basically sent at the same time. So we have this information, and then we have this follow-up information, and then we have this follow-up information, and they're dealing with. And really, if I was a better Bible student, we would be including Jude in tonight's study. But looking at that clock, we'd never make it. So we'll talk with Jude and Revelation next week. But yeah, I mean, so he starts those differently. I think that Kim makes a good point. In the first book, he's talking to this larger audience. So he is talking to everybody. Now, when we get over here to 1 John, still believe, I'm with you, Kim, I believe that he's talking to the church. And sometimes we get a little bit confused by the verbiage, but I think if we can look at the message, we can understand. Then when we get into 3 John, he's kind of narrowing his focus in 3 John. And hopefully we'll have time to get all the way through that. But we'll see that he has a very pointed purpose in 3 John, the way that he enters that letter and the way that he leaves that letter. So let's look at some verses real quick. It says, what is the reason? So I'll ask the question first. That way, when you're reading the verses, you can come up with the answer instead of doing it backwards and then putting you on the spot. I'm not going to make you read and then look right at you and make you answer the question, Vicky, so you're safe. I'm going to give you the question first. You're going to see. So what we're going to do, who's next? Bill, you're going to read out of 1 John, verse 4.
And these things we write that are joined and made whole.
Okay. Kim, will you read the second chapter, verse 1?
My dear children, I write this to you so that you cannot sin.
Okay. Oh, go ahead. Keep going.
If anybody does sin, we have one who speaks to the Father in our defense, Jesus Christ the righteous.
Awesome. Vicki, would you read verse 7? We're in chapter 2. Yep, sorry.
Verse 7?
Yep. Okay. Eileen, verse 8. Okay, let's just read. I've got a whole bunch more of these, but we'll just read. Let's look at verse 14. We'll let Ruth read that.
I have written to you, Father, because you know him who has been from the beginning. I have written to you, young men, because you are strong and the word of God abides in you, and you have overcome.
Okay, without reading all of the verses, what is the purpose of 1 John? Why do you write it? Yeah. So, verse 4, Bill read. And these things I write to you, why? That your joy may be full. That your joy may be full. That you walk in the light. I write to you, young men, because you're going through this. I write to the old men because they're going through this. Why weren't the women included? They are. It's in the language. But we got to touch on that. So the purpose of 1 John is just this book of encouragement. Yes.
And verse 2, chapter. It refers to the darkness is passing away. Is that speaking of the old law?
I don't think the old law is considered darkness. What could be passing away? And that's a good question. What can we talk about? He's talking about, sorry, didn't quote it. The darkness passing away. What is that? What do you think, Dean?
I think it's the world in 1 John 2 and verse 17. This world that you see around you is decaying. It's falling apart. But God, Jesus, the Word, those are the things that abide forever. And that's the spiritual world.
Did everybody hear that? I think that's an excellent way to put it. So let's just think about where this book is in the New Testament. And then what's coming. This question right here, this is actually why Jude belongs in this study, but it'll fit with Revelation also. What's happening in the world?
Can I ask another question?
Yes.
Somewhere else it mentions times of ignorance are passing away. Is that the same thing?
I don't know, and I'm not afraid to say that. But I will say this. The times of ignorance. What could people be ignorant about when it comes to, it's a long list, huh, Bob? I see Bob giggling over there. What did the Jews think Jesus' coming was going to do?
Be an earthly kingdom.
Yeah, be an earthly kingdom. What else did the Jews think?
They were going to lose their preeminence.
Well, but let's back up from that. What were they? What were they in times past? They were God's chosen people, and what was everybody else? Exactly. That seems Let's just back that up a little bit. Yes, they were God's chosen people, right? But let's just look at that in today's light. When you see a group of individuals with leather jackets and shaved heads and they're preaching their white supremacy rhetoric, what do we view that as?
Neo-Nazis or Hell's Angels?
Yeah. But how about ignorance? Does the same person even take that serious? Now, I'm not equating the Jews with that because the Jews were God's chosen people. The Israelites were separate. All right, but we're entering a time now when the word has been spoken to Gentiles. It has been opened up to everybody. Christ's true purpose has been revealed. His true message has been revealed. We're finding out it's not about an earthly kingdom and earthly power. In fact, we were never promised that, were we? We weren't actually even promised comfort in this earthly home, were we? So to answer your question, I don't know. I could defer to Dean, but I promise not to defer to Dean all night long. So otherwise, Dean should just teach the class.
Dean? We're gonna,
yes.
I think it sort of contrasts with the true light is already shining. In Dean's class this last week, I think it was, he says that I don't think he called them ignorant, but they think that their darkness is light. And so that sort of ties in with that.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, 1 John, actually all three books deal with darkness and light, and hopefully we'll get there. Let's just follow through this real quick. So the next question is, how does John refer to his audience? So we've got our books open. Now I can just tell you what verses to read. Or you can just guess. How does John refer to his audience?
Dear friends, dear children.
Yes, my little children. Beloved. What's that tell us? Yeah.
Relationship-based.
It's relationship-based. So, you know, we go back all the way to Ron's we comment. You know, we, even though it's John that's writing it. When we talk about things that are happening here, it's a we, isn't it? When Dean stands up here and preaches and he's dealing with something that the elders have decided, it's a we. It's a fellowship. I just think, you know, this is, what are these referred to as the love books, if you will. It's evident by John's language in so many different verses that he cares about these individuals. Do I have to know every one of God's children to care about them? So how can I love somebody that I don't know? Yeah. Bill?
Because you have a love of God in your heart.
So I love God.
But you have a relationship with those people.
Yeah.
Especially.
Because of Christ. So now I wish that was the case as we walked on earth. But there are so many in this world that share the same father, same mother, same grandparents, and yet they don't have that same love for one another. We can learn from that, can't we? Bill?
That's just exactly what you said. Old-fashioned people, when they meet a stranger comes to the door. Like a visitor comes here. And we should be able to take him in our arms and say, "Welcome."
Yeah.
We're happy to have you here.
Yes. Yeah. You know, shoot, what was that? What's that lady's name that visited with us for a little bit from Washington?
Dorothy.
Love that woman. Because she embodies this. They car pulled up. She was getting out of the car. And when I'm back there doing security, I greet everybody. One, because it's right, and two, for your safety. I would rather confront somebody strange outside the building than let them come into the building. But I went outside the building, went to shake her hand, and she just bear hugged me. And then she came into this building, and she didn't wait for any one of you to meet her. She walked through that door like we were family. Now we've been in this congregation, and we've talked about, you know, unloving congregations that we've gone to, unfriendly congregations that we've gone to. But wouldn't we remedy that if we walked through the door and took it into our own hands to love those brethren? Why is it their job? Why is it somebody else's job to love me? Ask Vicky. That's a hard job. Why can't I go visit a congregation in California or in Texas and be the person that walks through the door and says, "Hey, brother, how you doing? I'm Dean Anderson. Really happy to be here." I think that is exactly what we should do. Instead of... And we're going to pick up on that if we get to a little bit later on. We'll talk about the fact that we're being encouraged to hospitality. Not my strong suit. Love you all. Don't want you in my home. I really appreciate people that open their homes and have all kinds of people, and that's a struggle for me. Now, if you needed a place to stay, my door is open. If you needed something to eat, I'll be happy to feed you. But just know, I'm going to be really uncomfortable with you in my house. Whose problem is that? Yours or mine? It's mine. It is mine. One thing I have no shortage of is shortcomings. However, I'm not going to stand up here and lie to you and pretend like I'm more than I'm not. And I don't think we do ourselves any favors in doing that. Who hasn't read? Bob, would you read? Sure wish I could read my notes. Let's read 2 John, verse 10. And then Frank, would you read 3 John, verses 14 and then verses 18? Go ahead, Bob.
If anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not receive him into your house and do not give him a greeting.
Okay.
Which one am I reading?
You're going to read 3 John verses 14 and 18. What am I reading? So, 1 John, I'm sorry, we're in 1 John. Goodness, this is confusing to me. 1 John, 2nd chapter, 10th verse, Bob. That's why your verse did not make sense to me. And you're in 1 John, Frank, the 3rd chapter, 14 and 18.
Got it. The one who loves his brother abides in light, and there is no cause for stumbling at him.
Okay. Frank?
We know that we have passed from death unto life because we love his brother. He that loveth not his brother abideth in death. 18. My little children, let us not love the word, either tongue, but in deed and in truth.
Okay. Love. 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 What does that mean to you? How do I show love to my brethren? Let's get personal. How do I do it? My wife loves you. Okay? How else?
Respect and dignity.
Respect and dignity. Okay? Anything else? Dean?
I think it's responding to whatever they need.
Yeah.
If someone needs a place to stay, then I respond to that. Like you said, if you need a place to stay, come to my house. I'll give you a place to stay. If you need a meal, come to my house. I'll give you a meal. And if that's not what you, it may be that you need a hug. It may be that you need someone to sit down with you and have a come to Jesus talk, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen you do that with people who were kind of struggling spiritually. And you sat them down and you said, look, you need to get real about this. So it's responding to whatever the need of the moment is.
Okay, Kim?
And John kind of defines it that way in verse 17. He says, if anyone has material possessions and sees his brother in need but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him?
Yeah.
So we love with the love of God.
Yeah.
And that's responding to where they're at.
So let's take it one step further. How do I know what you need?
We gotta get to know each other.
We gotta get to know each other. Yeah. Gotta ask. Gotta see how people are doing.
Gotta listen.
Talk about, go ahead. What was that?
Gotta listen.
People, gotta listen.
And act on what you hear, not just, oh, that's too bad.
So how many times in our lives have our decisions been based on what somebody has done to us or to people around us, and then that motivates how we act towards them? We ever done that? Happens all the time, doesn't it? What does John say about that? Why am I bringing this up? I can tell you this, folks. If I talk about it, it's because I need it. All right? Very seldom will you ever hear me stand up here and talk about something that I just think you need, because I think that's wrong. So generally when I'm studying and I'm looking at things, or Dean's in a class and I'm listening to that class, whoever's teaching that class, I'm trying to figure out how that applies to me and what I need to do better. Okay, I've got a ton of faults, but one of the things that I do all the time is self-analyze. So very seldom will I need you to tell me what I'm doing wrong. What I will need you to do is tell me to quit knowing what I'm doing wrong and fix it. Because I don't always fix it when I know what's wrong. But this entire first book is about love, love of God, love of the brethren. But how is it contrasted? If you do this, the love of God is in you. If you do this, it is not. That alleviates all of the gray area, doesn't it? I survive way better in black and white worlds, right and wrong. Yes, no. I just function better that way. I love this book because John tells me in this book, knock it off. You say that you love God and yet you do this. What I say to you, Dean Anderson, is that if you do this, you don't love God. If you do this, the love of God is not in you. That seems harsh, doesn't it? But isn't that what we need to hear sometimes? Sometimes don't we just need to be told to knock it off? Quit being petty? We're studying forgiveness. Love. That study. But you know, one of the best lessons I ever heard on forgiveness was years and years ago at a youth lectureship. And the question was, how do I forgive when I'm still hurt? And I thought, ooh, this one's good because a lot of people have hurt me in my life. And I am good at holding a grudge. Do you know that the speaker never talked about that answer? What he said was, he went through Christ's life and Christ's suffering as a sinless individual for me, even though I did not deserve it. So how do I forgive when people have done me wrong? Because Christ forgave me. So as we read the book of 1 John, we need to examine ourselves and ask those hard questions. Are we walking in the light? If we say we're walking in the light, yet we're still sinning, what are we doing? We are lying. That seems harsh, doesn't it? I know how to get in a fight. I'll just call my wife a liar when she's telling me a story. We don't like that, do we? Every time. Sometimes in silence, sometimes. Yeah. So as I was saying a little bit earlier, we've got to move. Several of the scholars that I wrote, or that I wrote, I read. You didn't know that. I write commentaries. None of them accurate. View 2nd and 3rd John as what they call supporting letters. And so we can turn over to 2nd John. What's the foremost concern in 2nd John? What's he talking about there? We've had a chance to look over it. We've had a chance to read it. But what's he saying there?
Now.
Walking in truth and walking in love.
Walking in truth. Walking in love. I heard a voice out here. Did somebody say something different?
The truth is very.
Okay. So being honest. Verse 9. Whoever transgresses and does not abide in the doctrine of Christ does not have God. He who abides in the doctrine of Christ has both the Father and the Son. So then we have to get real about what that means. And then we have to look at ourselves and our decisions. Let's just get right down to it. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 people here. How many members do we have?
No, there's 26 people here.
There's 26 people here. How many? I always forget you guys. Sorry. Mainly because when I sit in the back, I can't count you. But what is it? What do we got? Do we have to get a little bit real about whether or not our service is acceptable? Is Sunday morning only service? Does that fit? Maybe that's all you can do. I understand people have work, people have lives. But let's go back to love. How do I show my brethren that I love? How do I show Lenny that Lenny is important to me? Did I care about Lenny?
Dean?
You show up. Go ahead.
I was going to say we show it by hearing and being doers. We're doers. We need to show it. We're here. We listen. So we do it. We show it that way.
Yeah. No, I agree. But don't we support him? So Lenny puts a lot of time into two different lesson series, right? Now, we can all say, we all have our style of teacher, right? Some people love Dick Mallier. Some people love Larry Haverstock. Some people kind of like Dean. Do I show my love to Lenny by going, yeah, I just really don't want to study Acts again. I'm going to stay home. He's just not really my kind of speaker, so I'm going to stay home.
Dean?
Yes.
real quick, Lenny is showing his love, like you're showing your love right now, by preparing a lesson for us. It would be the 10 a month that somebody fixes a meal and then nobody shows up. That doesn't show the love and respect and honor that is due a person who has done that for you.
I agree. Now, let's flip that, though. Let's flip that. As someone that stands here and teaches, do I need 90 people or is 26 enough? It's two enough.
What is if, enough?
What?
John 4, Jesus spoke to the woman at the well. Apparently, there was nobody else there.
Exactly. So we can't, there's so many times, and I've struggled as a Bible class teacher to find the motivation to put together lessons when the kids never show up. I've struggled with that. But is that right? Shouldn't I be excited to prepare a Bible lesson even if only one shows up? It's hard. It's hard. But when we look at 1 John and we look at 2 John, is it about the negative focus? So I'm going to get down and I just don't want to put the effort in. Do you know how hard it is when you work 65, 70 hours a week and you're mentally exhausted? This is not a pity party, by the way, because we all have free time. But it is difficult. My mind never shuts off. Work used to be work, soccer. Now it's just work and life where my kids are. But it just goes. I take medication to stop it so I can go to sleep. But it's tough. You know, you get into a rhythm. I am exhausted being a full-time daycare provider at my place of business, whether it's with my employees or my customers or my contractors. When I get home, I just want to sit down. So would it be right for me to go, well, you know, there's only 13 people show up to the building on Wednesday nights, and I just don't know that that's worth my time. Would that be all right? Yeah. If I had to come down here like Dean did during COVID and be in an empty building so that 15 of us could watch on Zoom, it would be worth it, wouldn't it? Because that's love both ways. But I do think that we have to take a hard look at ourselves. What message are we saying when we decide not to come? When we decide not to come, what we are saying first and foremost is that God isn't a high enough priority. Second of all, my edification of you isn't all that important. So as we get over into 3 John talking about hospitality again, somebody's going to be invited to my house for dinner. Not till I can grill. But we have to look at that, don't we? We have to look at what we're saying to our brethren. Now, here's one thing that I can say about our brethren. There is a group of women in this congregation that miss nothing. They are at everything. And I don't think that that kind of stuff is talked about enough, but I bet you John would write about it. I bet you when John in 2nd or 3rd John is addressing his beloved Gaius, or he's talking to the elect lady of the church, that he would be talking about the examples that we have in this congregation. So we have to focus on the positive. You know, you don't want to end a study on negatives. So what we have to do, what we have to take away from the study of John is, are we loving God, living right, or are we lying? Some of us might be lying. And I'm going to be really honest with you. That's okay. As long as you do something about it. Right? Long as we do something about it. Are we going to be perfect? Ever? Well, not in this physical body. But as we, I mean, they're just, we could spend, I could anyway, a lot of weeks studying the book of First John. You know, and early on as a Christian, you look at this, you're like, this is only 2 pages. What are we going to talk about? There's so many things to talk about, so many examples. Talking about fellowship, talking about love. But most importantly, we just have to remember in these books, it is black or white. It is right or wrong. We are serving God or we are not serving God. One of the things that has been a struggle for mankind for years. Favoritism, right? So when Emily was young, Emily started going to school when she was 2. She went with Kirsten to kindergarten. And then she went with Kirsten to first grade. And then she went with Kirsten to second grade. And then she finally got to go to school herself. And she was one of those model students, right? And there's not a lot of those in the world today. Well, Emily started getting extra favors. The teachers appreciated Emily because she was sweet and she did her lessons. Emily's third grade teacher, when she was gone, wouldn't give the sub the lesson material. She would say, ask Emily what we're doing on this. Okay. But then as Emily got older, she was able to use that a little bit to garner favor. Maybe get away with a little bit more than this child over here, because this child over here was a little bit more trouble. Now, she was never a bad kid. But she's this cute little thing, right? What do we do in this society today? We favor athletes. We favor politicians. We favor movie stars. We favor people of importance. And because of that, we set aside the right and the wrong, and we make exceptions, don't we? And that's become the new rule. And it's one of the things that I like to talk about in my high school classes and in my younger classes, is that that ain't going to happen in the church. God doesn't care how cute I am. I'm pretty adorable. Ask Vicky, I'm hilarious too. Doesn't matter, does it? I am either walking in the light or I am walking in darkness. Doesn't matter how much I give on Sundays, how many activities I do around the building. None of that matters, does it? It might matter on a personal level. But we have a just God. And that just God is going to hand down judgment correctly. Not based on how we look or where we live or how many friends we have on Twitter or any of these other things. We're going to be judged on whether or not we love one another. Whether we love God, whether we keep his commandments. And that's it. So we have to just continually look at books like 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. And then weigh ourselves against them. And if we do that, and if we strive to move forward, then I think that we'll be successful. I think there's some fabulous people here. I think that we have allowed because of the situation in this world, for ourselves to get a little bit lax and a little bit lazy. I will be the first one to tell you how lazy I got. But that time's over. It's time to get to work, isn't it? Time to walk the walk. We talk about being a light in the community. It's time to be a light in the community. One of the first things Larry did when he came here was teach a class on how to speak. And one of the books that he had us read, horrible book, really hard to read. But the message was amazing. It's called The Tipping Point, and I recommend it, and I'll bet you Dean's read it. The Tipping Point. And the point of The Tipping Point was just how small of a group of people it takes to change societal views. One of the examples was Vans tennis shoes. This little company made these tennis shoes. Nobody was buying them. They were going out of business. And then some little hipster dude from this little community saw them, thought they were cool, wore them out there where all of his other little hipster friends were, and they thought they were cool. And just like that, it exploded. And there were a lot of examples like that. Oftentimes, we look at the big, big picture, and we think, man, it's just, this world is just such a mess that I can't fix it. But really, it's a lot like cleaning your room. You walk into that room and there's clothes and there's wrappers and there's junk everywhere and the task seems ominous. And really all you have to do is pick one thing to start. So all we have to do is start our day looking to be a light in someone else's life. Be an example. Be something that someone can turn to. Does anybody have anything else before we close?